Ready to dive deep, we're tackling the pastoral epistles.
You mean 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus?
Exactly. And we've got a great guide, Dr. Robert Yarbrough. He's been teaching and pastoring for, gosh, like 40 years.
Not just in one place either.
Oh, no. He's been all over, from the U.S. to Romania, Sudan, South Sudan, and even South Africa.
Wow. He's even lectured in places like Hong Kong, Australia, and Korea. Talk about a global perspective.
That's what makes this so interesting. These letters are relevant, like wherever you are in the world.
And Dr. Yarbrough, he really emphasizes how these letters are packed with, you know, practical stuff, especially for those of us trying to live out our faith when things get tough.
Yeah, it's not just theory. It's about real life stuff.
Speaking of real life stuff, think about Timothy.
Paul's protege.
Yeah, the one who faced persecution right alongside him. Well, Paul sends him to Ephesus.
Wasn't that a city known for, like, intense spiritual warfare?
Big time. Imagine a city where magic and the occult were totally normal and spiritual opposition, oh, it was fierce. That's where Timothy had to lead the church and defend the gospel.
Okay, so how does that help us understand these letters? Like, what's the connection?
Well, when you look at what these letters talk about most, it's about trusting God in the middle of difficulty. Like, if you do a word frequency analysis,
what's that?
It just means looking at which words pop up most often. In these letters, it's God, Christ, faith, good, faithful, that kind of stuff.
So it's like those words are a guide for us when things are hard, reminding us to stay focused on God.
Exactly. Remember, even when everything seems crazy, God is faithful.
You know what else is crazy? That riot in Ephesus, started by silversmiths. Their business was tanking because people were turning to Christianity.
Right. Their idol-making business was taking a hit.
Talk about a challenging environment.
Yeah.
Timothy and those early Christians needed some serious courage to stand firm.
Oh, absolutely. And there's that story from Acts chapter 19. Remember those seven sons of Sceva?
The ones who tried to use Jesus' name to cast out a demon.
Yep, and they got totally beaten up. Shows you the kind of spiritual battle happening in Ephesus.
Okay, before we get too deep into these letters, there's a question that comes up a lot. Did Paul really write these letters?
Ah, yeah. Some scholars question that. They say the style and some of the themes aren't quite like Paul's other letters.
But Dr. Yarbrough disagrees, right?
He does.
Yeah.
He says there's historical evidence that these letters are really from Paul. Early church leaders always said they were his.
So it's not just about how they're written. It's about what they say, too.
Right. The core teachings match up with Paul's other writings. But honestly, the biggest thing for Dr. Yarbrough is that he trusts the Bible. He knows about the scholarly debates, but he sticks with what the historical and theological tradition has always said.
So for him, trusting that the Bible's right about Paul being the author is, like, his foundation.
Definitely.
Okay, back to Timothy in Ephesus. Why did Paul write to him in the first place?
Well, in 1 Timothy chapter 1, verse 3, Paul tells Timothy to stay in Ephesus and fight against false teaching. He's basically saying, Timothy, hold the line. Don't let the gospel get messed up.
That makes sense, given all that spiritual chaos we were talking about.
Totally. And that's where this word godliness or eusebia comes in. You see it a lot in these letters, but not as much in Paul's other stuff.
Interesting.
Dr. Yarbrough thinks this shows how important it is to actually live out your faith. You know, like reflecting Christ's character in everyday life.
It's more than just saying you believe, right? You got to live it out, even in a crazy place like Ephesus.
Exactly. And that's where faithful leadership is so important. Paul talks about character, integrity, and a proven track record, you know, not just skills or being a good speaker.
So Paul's like, Timothy, your life needs to show that you truly know Christ. You have to be the real deal.
Exactly. Being, not just doing. And that being comes from a deep connection with Christ, letting him change your thoughts, actions, everything.
And even though love doesn't show up as often, Dr. Yarbrough says it's still the core motivation behind everything.
Absolutely. It's like Paul's reminding Timothy and all of us that love is the fuel for a godly life. It's not about rules or rituals. It's about a changed heart.
You know what's interesting? In 1 Timothy chapter 2, Paul says to pray for all people, even kings and those in authority.
Isn't that wild? Even when Christians were being persecuted, Paul doesn't tell them to fight back. He tells them to pray, even for their leaders.
Yeah, that seems pretty counterintuitive. Why do you think he did that?
Dr. Yarbrough suggests that Paul knew true hope isn't found in political solutions or social movements, but in God. He knew prayer had the power to change things.
That's a powerful reminder for us today, too. It's so easy to get caught up in all the division and forget to pray. especially for those we disagree with.
You got it. It's about finding that inner peace that comes from knowing that ultimately God is in control.
A peace that goes beyond our circumstances and comes from knowing Christ.
Now, let's talk about that passage in 1 Timothy chapter 2 that addresses women in the church. That one always gets people talking.
Yeah, we need to approach this one carefully and humbly, for sure. Dr. Yarbo stresses looking at the situation in Ephesus when we interpret this passage. Can you remind us about what was going on there?
Well, Ephesus was a city with lots of false teachings. Plus, the culture had its own ideas about how women should act, which probably influenced some of the women in the church.
So maybe Paul was addressing specific problems that were messing things up in the church, not setting a rule for all women everywhere all the time.
It's possible. He does say that women should learn quietly and submissively. Maybe that was to counter some women who were being disruptive because they were spreading false teachings.
It's fascinating how that cultural stuff in Ephesus shaped what Paul wrote. We got to remember, context is key. We can't just read these verses in a vacuum.
For sure. Whatever your take on this passage, what's clear is that Paul wanted the church to be unified and orderly, and he cared about everyone in the church.
Before we move on to 2 Timothy and Titus, there's one more thing Dr. Yarbro points out. It's this phrase, faithful is the word, which appears only in these pastoral epistles. Why do you think Paul uses that phrase?
Logos pistos. It's like he's putting his stamp of approval on his message, saying, this is true. You can trust it. And it all goes back to God being faithful. It's like a reminder to Timothy that even when things are rough, God's got his back. It's a thread of hope throughout these letters. Even when things get tough, God can be trusted.
That's beautiful. I bet that phrase encouraged Timothy a lot, especially in Ephesus. We're definitely going to need to keep exploring these letters to understand more about that phrase. Join us next time as we dive deeper into 2 Timothy. We'll be looking at leadership, perseverance, and passing on the faith to the next generation. Welcome back to our deep dive. Last time we were in 1 Timothy, seeing how Paul urged Timothy to, stand firm in his faith, even with all that crazy stuff happening in Ephesus.
And that phrase, faithful is the word. Dr. Yarbro connected that to the qualifications for church leaders in 1 Timothy chapter 3.
Oh, yeah. It's not enough to just talk the talk. You got to walk the walk. But what about those of us who aren't, pastors or church leaders? Does this idea of faithful leadership apply to us too?
Absolutely. Dr. Yarbro is big on the idea that we're all called to show God's faithfulness in our lives, no matter what we do.
So like parents, teachers, artists, everyone.
Everyone. It's about making our lives match up with God's will, even when it's hard. Being honest, trustworthy, persevering, using our gifts to help others. It's about constantly growing and becoming more like Christ.
That's a tall order, but definitely inspiring. And it makes me think about those instructions on prayer in 1 Timothy chapter 2. Mm-hmm. Paul tells Timothy to make sure people are praying for everyone, including kings and those in authority.
It's interesting, right? Even in the face of persecution, Paul doesn't say, fight back. He says, pray, even for the people in charge.
It's like the opposite of what you'd expect.
I know. But Dr. Yarbro points out that Paul knew real hope wasn't about political solutions or anything like that. It's about God working through prayer.
Yeah, we can get so caught up in the world's drama, can't we? We forget that prayer can actually change things.
Especially praying for those we don't agree with. It's so important.
And it's not just about praying for others, right? It's about finding that peace and godliness within ourselves, too. Like Paul says, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness.
It's about having a peace that goes beyond what's happening around us. A peace that comes from knowing Christ.
Okay, now for the passage that, it tends to get people a little riled up, 1 Timothy chapter 2, the role of women in the church.
Definitely a passage that needs to be approached carefully and humbly. Dr. Yarbro reminds us to consider the situation in Ephesus. Remember, they had all those false teachings floating around, plus their own cultural stuff going on.
Right, so maybe those things influenced how Paul wrote these verses.
Exactly. He's talking about women learning quietly and submissively. Maybe that was specifically to counter some women who were, causing trouble and promoting those false teachings.
It's a good reminder to not just take these verses out of context. Got to look at the bigger picture.
Absolutely. And, even though this passage is debated and interpreted in different ways, what's clear is that Paul wanted unity in the church, and he cared about everyone in it.
Now on to 2 Timothy, and we notice a real shift in tone, don't we?
Oh, yeah. 1 Timothy was more about, setting things straight in the church. But 2 Timothy feels way more personal, almost like a final goodbye.
Like we're listening in on a private conversation between Paul and Timothy.
Exactly. Knowing that Paul's time is running out, faithful is the word, takes on a whole new meaning.
Deeper, for sure. It's not just about trusting God for everyday stuff. It's about trusting him with, well, everything, even death.
And that same confidence comes through when Paul tells Timothy to guard the deposit entrusted to you. It's like he's handing over this precious treasure and saying, protect it, Timothy, and share it with the world.
That deposit is the gospel message, right?
Yeah.
The truth that can change lives.
Yes. But Paul knew this task wouldn't be easy. That's why he tells Timothy in chapter 1, verse 7, that the spirit God gave us doesn't make us timid. It gives us power, love, and self-discipline.
So we're not alone in this. Even when things get tough, God gives us what we need.
Right. He even tells Timothy to fan into flame the gift of God.
That refers back to when Timothy was ordained, right? The laying on of hands.
Yes. And it's a reminder to all of us to stay connected to the source of our calling, to keep that fire burning.
You know, life can be so distracting. It's easy to let that fire die down. We all need to be reminded of what sparked that fire in the first place. And then there's that powerful statement in chapter 4. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith.
So powerful, especially knowing that Paul is probably facing execution soon. His confidence isn't in what he's done, but in God.
And he's challenging us to run our own race with that same commitment.
Speaking of finishing the race, in Titus, the last letter, Paul talks about what makes a good church leader. He focuses on sound teaching and godly living.
It's like these themes we've been talking about, faithfulness, godliness, truth. They run through all three letters.
They really do. And in Titus, Paul specifically calls out good works.
Not just believing the right things, but doing them too.
Exactly. He says, "For the grace of God has appeared that offers salvation to all people. It teaches us to say no to ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in this present age."
So grace isn't just about being forgiven. It's about being changed. It's about letting our lives show that change, making a real difference. Welcome back. So we've journeyed through 1 Timothy and 2 Timothy, right? We've unpacked all that goodness about faithfulness, godliness, and actually like living out the gospel.
Even when things get tough.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now we land in Titus. What stands out to you here?
You know, in Titus, I see Paul tying together sound doctrine and, you know, actually living a godly life.
It's not just head knowledge, right? It's about transformation.
Yes. Like in Titus chapter 2, verses 11 and 12, Paul writes, "For the grace of God has appeared that offers salvation to all people. It teaches us to say no to ungodliness and worldly passions and to live self-controlled, upright, and godly lives in this present age." It's like grace empowers us, you know, to say no to sin and live like Christ.
So it's more than just waiting for heaven. It's about living it out now, making a difference. How does this connect to leadership, though? Specifically, what Paul tells Titus about church leadership.
Well, Paul really gets into those qualifications for elders and deacons. He's super focused on character and integrity.
So it's got to be more than just being able to speak well or organize stuff.
Totally. Those who lead have got to be living examples. Their lives have to match their message.
Walk the walk, not just talk the talk.
Exactly. It all comes back to having a real relationship with Christ, showing those fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, all that good stuff.
And that phrase, faithful is the word. It takes on a whole new meaning when you think about leadership, doesn't it?
It really does. It's like a seal of trustworthiness, showing that you can rely on those who lead.
You know, when I think about the leaders who have impacted me most, it's the ones who embodied that.
Yeah.
Faithfulness, integrity, genuine love for God and others. They didn't just say it, they lived it.
That's so true. And it reminds us that these leadership principles in Titus, they go beyond just official church roles. They apply to anyone who's in a position to influence others, like parents, teachers, bosses.
So powerful. It's amazing how these letters, written ages ago to specific people, still speak to us today.
They really do. They offer guidance for navigating faith, leadership, and life in a world that, honestly, often pushes back against the gospel.
And as we wrap up this deep dive into the pastoral epistles, I'm struck by how they come together. All these threads of instruction and encouragement, from the challenges in Ephesus to Paul's final words.
It's about standing strong in your faith. It's about letting that faith shape your life. It's about sharing the message. It's about making a real difference.
And it all comes back to that one powerful phrase. Faithful is the word. It's not just a nice saying. It's the foundation of everything.
It's about trusting God, even when things are hard, and living a life that reflects that trust.
Thank you for joining us on this journey through the pastoral epistles. We hope you're feeling inspired and ready to live out your faith with passion. Keep seeking, keep growing, and remember, faithful is the word.